The Lord's Supper is supposed to be a meal and not just a taste. Well, I didn't really know exactly what the person meant by that question, so I'm going to attack it from two different standpoints, if you will. The first thing that I want to do is to take you back to the institution of the Lord's Supper. We see it in three of the four Gospels. One is in Matthew 26. Here in Matthew 26, you find that Matthew records for us that while they were eating, Jesus took some bread, and after a blessing, he broke it, gave it to the disciples, and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." Now, while they were eating, let me first of all say that this is during the Passover meal. The disciples have gathered together in the upper room and are eating the Passover because Jesus had said he desired to eat the Passover with them one more time before his death. Mark also basically gives us the same account. In Mark chapter 14, you'll find he says again, while they were eating, he took some of the bread and after blessing it, he broke it and gave it to them and said, and basically he says the same thing as we find recorded in Matthew. Luke does not tell us that it was at the meal. You have to back up and read more of the context of Luke 22 to get that. But Luke gives us this. He says, when he had taken some of the bread and given thanks, he broke it, gave it to them, and said, or saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." That's where we have this on the front of this table up here, if you haven't noticed. And also, in the same way, he took the cup after he'd eaten, saying, "This cup is poured out for you, and this cup which is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood." Now, all of that being said, let me give you one more passage, 1 Corinthians chapter 11. There in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul deals with an abuse that is taking place in the church at Corinth. It seems that if you back up and look in the context, then there are those that are coming out and eating. Worship probably in the church in Corinth did not take place on a Sunday morning like it does for us because many of them were slaves. And so they could not come and gather until either the markets closed or until they were free to leave their homes and come out and gather together. So I get the impression that they've come together probably more in the afternoon or evening. And as they are gathering, the wealthier of those that are gathered there are eating. And out of that, Paul reprimands them for doing that because they're not sharing with the poorer segment of the congregation. It's kind of if you walk in to the enrichment center and there are several of us that are eating and we don't offer you anything. And so Paul says, listen, you've got homes to eat in. Do that at home. Okay? And then he goes into the Lord's Supper. And here's what Paul says. He says, "For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, in the night in which he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat the bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes.'" Now, there is a background in the Old Testament to the Lord's Supper. The Lord's Supper draws from two different things that took place with Israel and perfects those because the completeness of all of it is found in Jesus Christ. The first of those, both of them are something you're familiar with. The first is what we know as the Passover. If you go back to Exodus chapter 12, and if you read verses 1 through 27, you find the institution of the Passover. You may remember that it came about as a result of the last plague that God brought upon the children of Israel there in Egypt. Pharaoh had still refused to let them go. And so what God was fixing to do was to bring about the death of every firstborn. Okay? And throughout Egypt and Israel, if they did not follow what he specified they must do. And so what he tells them to do is they are to gather in their homes if there is, and they are to kill, as you notice here, a one-year-old unblemished either goat or sheep. And they are to roast it. They are to take the meat, they are to roast it. They're to take the blood from that goat or sheep, and they're to smatter that blood on the doorpost and on the lintel. That is, on both sides of the door and over the door. The purpose of that is, as the Lord passed through Egypt that evening, wherever the blood of that goat or sheep was found, he would pass over that house. That's why it came to be known as Passover. And he would not take the life of the oldest child within that home. Okay? Now, in addition to that one-year-old unblemished male goat that they were to roast and they were to eat, he said none of it was to be left until morning, so they were to eat it. In addition to that, they were also to eat unleavened bread. Okay? And some herbs, bitter herbs and spices that went with that. Okay? Now, Passover. It was to be eaten, if you'll notice here at the bottom, it was to be eaten in haste. As they ate it, they were to be fully dressed, sandals on, loins girded, staff in hand, ready to go. It was not the typical sit down and enjoy a nice leisurely meal. That was not the intention of Passover. It was a constant reminder of the fact that God was involved in bringing about the freedom of His people, and He was passing over those who had obeyed Him and done what He had told them to do. Okay? In a similar sense, and we'll look at this here in just a moment with the Lord's Supper, Jesus takes the place of the Passover lamb. Okay? And so you need to kind of register that idea in your mind if you haven't already. The other thing that was a part of the Israel's heritage is something known as the Day of Atonement, or as you sometimes probably have heard it called, Yom Kippur. We find that instituted, given in the law, in Leviticus chapter 16, verses 1 through 34. And basically what we have is that one day out of the year, God had set aside a day in which atonement was to be made for the sins of all the people. That is, those sins were to be removed. And God was to, basically, He would look forward, as I understand it, because that's what we find in the Hebrew writer, to the time of Christ coming and take away those sins, because the Hebrew writer says that the blood of bulls and goats cannot take away sins. So this is something that was set in place looking forward to the coming of Christ. What did it involve? First of all, Aaron and his household had to do something for themselves. What Aaron was to do was to take one bull as a sin offering. He was to slaughter that bull, and he was to take that blood. It was to be used as a sin offering, and the blood was to be sprinkled on the mercy seat for himself and for his household before he could ever offer sacrifices on behalf of Israel. And then there were to be two goats that were chosen, and they were to cast lots to determine which of the two goats was to be a sin offering and which of the two goats was to be what we typically call a scapegoat. Okay, or literally, if you go back and look at the text, it is in the original, it's Azazel. It is a goat of removal. Okay, and what would happen is the goat for the sin offering for the people would be slaughtered. The blood would be drained, and that blood would be sprinkled on the mercy seat and the other things that went along with the sin offering. The other goat, which is called the scapegoat, Aaron was to come out and he was to take that goat, place his hands upon the head of the goat, and speak on that goat the sins of the people, and then that goat was to be taken outside of the camp and sent off into the wilderness. That way the sins of the people were carried away. Okay? That's the idea. Now, when you bring together the Day of Atonement, or Atonement, and also Passover, you have what Christ did for us. He became our Passover lamb. He was that unblemished male upon which the sins of all mankind have been cast. God made Him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf, that we might become the righteousness of God in Him. That's what Paul said. That's the way he put it. So He became our Passover lamb. All right? Not only that, it is through this atonement, because if you remember the Day of Atonement, the high priest entered into the Holy of Holies, the place where God's presence dwelt. Well, what did Christ do with His death? He entered into the very presence of God, so that once for all time He might make atonement for our sins. So that's where you bring together the two concepts. Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and also Passover. Now, that being said, look at the Lord's Supper. There are two emblems that we generally partake of in the Lord's Supper. This is what we find mentioned in the text that I gave to you earlier. One is what we call the fruit of the vine. It represents Christ's blood, okay, which is that which cleanses us and takes away our sin. Okay, it is the redemption price that has been paid for our sin. Not only that, unleavened bread, Christ's body, is what that represents. Now, I need to say something with this right here. Sometimes we hear in a prayer, and men, I'm just going to make you aware of something. If we ever pray, which is broken for us, you need to understand Christ's body was never broken. Not a bone of him shall be broken. The psalmist said it, and we find that it's later fulfilled, and we're reminded of that. So he broke the bread, but he never said in instituting the Lord's Supper, "This is my body which is broken for you." He never said that. He did break the bread, but he didn't say it was his body that was being broken, because his body was never broken. It was pierced through, and blood came forth, blood and water. But that being said, here's what I want us to understand. In the sense of a meal of that nature, where we sit down and leisurely eat together, no, I don't see that that's the idea that is presented in the Lord's Supper. Okay? Because if we're trying to connect it with the Passover meal, that was a meal that was eaten in haste. But coming back to the question, is the Lord's Supper a meal, or is it, you know, just a taste? Let me share with you one other passage. In Acts chapter 20, verse 7, and this is one of the reasons some people question, why do we do the Lord's Supper every week, every Sunday? Because, as you know, there are some that don't do that. They do it maybe once a month or once a year or maybe a few more times than that. Where do we get our authority for doing it every Lord's Day? Well, there are two passages. I've given one here. In Acts chapter 20, verse 7, Paul is on his way back to Jerusalem. And one of the things that you find is that as he is on his way back to Jerusalem, he stops at a place called Troas. And while he is there, he stays, and I want you to notice this. This is what I find interesting. He stays for a period of time. Okay? 7 days, to be exact. Why seven? Why not stay five? Why not stay 10? Well, what we find here is that on the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, I believe that the reason Paul stayed was because he wanted to break bread, have the Lord's Supper with the Christians who were there in Troas. Because it says on the first day of the week he did that. Now, it doesn't say on Passover, the Sunday following Passover. It doesn't give a specific day of the year. It gives first day of the week. We find that the Christians met on the first day of the week. We find in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1, the contribution is to be collected first day of the week. Okay? That each of us are to lay by in store as God has prospered us, first day of the week. We don't have a problem with taking up contribution every first day of the week. You won't find, I don't think, a single denomination that would say, "Oh no, we need to only take up contribution once a year." I don't think anybody does that. It's every Sunday. We're going to take up contribution. Lord's Supper is to be done that way. Now, I said I was going to approach it from two different standpoints. The other standpoint I believe that maybe the person who asked this question might be driving at is this. Have we taken the Lord's Supper and relegated it to a very small part of our worship rather than it being what God intended it to be? And folks, I believe that we in the churches of Christ may be becoming guilty of that in some sense. I do not believe that the Lord's Supper was something that was just given 10 minutes out of a worship service. I believe the Lord's Supper was something that took time, that people invested in it, they thought about it, because of several things. Number one, it is the Lord's Supper. It is the time in which it's also called something else, communion. And it is the time in which we commune with Him. And we remember His death, His burial, and His resurrection. I tried to find it for you tonight. I was listening to a sermon preached by a preacher who has passed away, but he mentioned this, and I had it on something that I had recorded, and I was trying to find that particular sermon because I wanted to give you that. But years ago, in the Gospel Advocate, it was put in the Gospel Advocate back in the late 1800s and then reprinted in the Gospel Advocate in the early 1900s. There was an article by a lady who had written about what making the bread for the Lord's Supper meant to her. I think that's one thing that we've lost. I can remember years ago, the ladies, when I grew up at Walnut Street Church of Christ, there in the kitchen at the church building, baking the bread for the Lord's Supper. I can remember that plate every Sunday as it was passed around. That was bread that their hands had made. And we've gone from that. The little things that we break are called matzos. It's made by a Jewish company out of Nashville, Tennessee. And now we've gone to the little things that are already broken for us. And I think maybe that's where the person is coming from. If we just taken it from something it was intended, made it just a little taste. But coming back to what this lady said in her article, she talked about how she would roll it out with, you know, a rolling pin. And as she did that, as she rolled out that dough, she would be reminded of the fact of what Isaiah says in Isaiah 53, that he was beaten for our iniquities. And then as she would take her knife and score it so that others could later break it off, it would remind her of the fact that by his stripes we are healed. You know, it is the idea of what we are doing when we stop for a moment in time as we gather on the first day of the week and we remember what happened for us in remembrance of me. It's so important that we don't just take the Lord's Supper and just kind of put it into a little segment of our worship so we can say, I've done that, I fulfilled my duty for this Sunday, but that we understand there is an aspect of it in which we are fellowshipping with God and with His Son, and we are communing with Him until that day when we shall commune with Him at the banquet table in heaven above. And so, I guess what I would say to you is, when we think about the question that was asked, is if we have taken it and just made it some small portion of our worship, we've got to change that and start giving it more of the place that I believe the early church relegated it or gave to it. It was a very important thing for them, and we need to do the same.